You're with SBS Radio. Find more great stories in your language at sbs.com.au.
One in three of our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander bubs experience ear and hearing troubles that can make it hard for them to listen, learn, and talk to others. Hearing Australia's Happy program offers free, safe, and simple hearing checks for kids under six or not yet attending full-time school. Give your kids happy ears today. Call Hearing Australia on 134 432 or visit hearing.com.au today.
Now it's that time of the week to catch up with Wiradjuri woman and science and technology editor Ray Johnston to talk about developments in the science and technology realm. Welcome to ITV Radio, Ray.
Thanks for having me back. Lovely to speak to you again.
Yeah, second one of the year, and we start with quantum computing and quantum batteries. We start with the first. Let's look at quantum batteries, because researchers at the University of Adelaide and their overseas partners have taken a key step in making quantum batteries a reality. What's quantum batteries, and what discovery have they made?
Yeah, this is amazing. So when we get quantum batteries and quantum computing, all sorts of quantum technology off the ground, it basically means that we're going to be engaging with any kind of technology a lot faster and a lot more efficiently. Faster and more efficiently than we can imagine, really. It's the future. And what these researchers have done is they've proven the idea of superabsorption, which is quantum batteries need less charging time the bigger they get. I know it sounds silly, but it's the way that they work. Now, it is possible that the charging power of quantum batteries, it gets faster and it increases faster than the size of the battery, which could allow new ways for speed charging to happen. Now, that's the idea of superabsorption. And to prove the idea of it, the team, they built a bunch of little wafer-like micro cavities, tiny little cavities of different sizes with different numbers of organic molecules inside them. And each of those molecules was charged electronically using a laser. And the active layer of those micro cavities, it has an organic semiconductor material in it that store that energy. And as that micro cavity size increased and got bigger, and the number of molecules increased and got bigger, the charging time decreased. It was less than what they thought. And this discovery is a really big breakthrough. It's a big milestone in the development of the quantum battery. And the quantum battery, it could hugely impact energy capture and storage in renewable energy, and also in little miniature electronic devices as well. And this is important information, because by 2040, we know that the energy consumed by people, it's expected to have increased by about 28% from 2015 levels, which is a huge amount. And the majority of that energy is still going to come from fossil fuels at a great cost to the environment. So a battery that is capable of harvesting and storing light energy at the same time, which is what quantum batteries could do, would make getting energy from solar technologies much cheaper and a lot more predictable as well. So the concepts that this team have worked on, it opens up the possibility of a whole new range of compact and powerful energy storing devices. And the next step they're going to take is develop a fully functioning quantum battery prototype, which has never been done anywhere in the world. So hats off to the University of Adelaide researchers on this one. They're doing amazing work down there.
Yeah, another great one from Australia. And especially I can see some applications if this gets a real life application.
Absolutely. It would be absolutely life-changing for so many things that we use every day that we wouldn't even think of until we've got this technology at our fingertips, really. I'm very excited for when quantum technology is in place.
Yeah, I hope the government funds it and it stays in Australia, because Yeah, and then the applications get actually put in place by Australian companies. And now we stay still in the realm of quantum computing, but this time with new silicon computer chip technique that opens up quantum computing construction possibilities. What's this about?
Yeah, this is a cool one, actually. So, yeah, quantum computers, they could be made really cheaply and reliably using this new technique. It's been perfected by a University of Melbourne-led team. So more Australian scientists are doing some good work in quantum computing and quantum technology. And what it does is it embeds single atoms in silicon wafers one by one. And they believe that they could make large-scale machines, big machines, based on single-atom quantum bits by using this method and taking advantage of the manufacturing techniques that the semiconductor industry has already perfected. So this technique, it takes advantage of the precision of the atomic force microscope, which has a sharp lever that touches the surface of a chip with a positioning accuracy of just half a nanometer, so about the same as spacing between atoms in a silicon crystal. And what this team did is they drilled a tiny hole in this lever so that when it was showered with phosphorus atoms, one would occasionally drop through that hole and embed into the silicon. But the key to doing this was knowing exactly when one atom, and no more than one atom, had become embedded in that silicon. So when the lever had done that, it could then move to the next precise position on the array. And the team discovered that the kinetic energy of the atom, as it goes into that silicon crystal and dissipates all of its energy by friction, that can make a little tiny electronic clicking noise. So the team could hear the electronic click as each atom dropped into one of the 10,000 sites in this prototype device. So they could go, oh, there's a click, an atom's there. Now we can move the lever to the next spot. And this is so cool because until now, implanting atoms in silicon, it's been all over the place. A silicon chip just gets showered with phosphorus. And all of it gets implanted in just this random pattern, kind of like raindrops on a window. So instead of implanting many atoms in random locations and then picking the ones that work best, they'll now be able to be placed in an orderly array similar to transistors in conventional semiconductors in computer chips. We can use these quantum computers once they're built, you know, to optimize your timetables and finances, and you know, we can use it for drug design. We could even use it for rapid development of vaccines. So getting quantum computing off the ground is super important for the future. And this new computer chip technique is just incredible and just one piece of the big quantum computing puzzle that we're slowly putting together. Most of it in Australia, the research has come from.
Yeah, that's another very exciting bit. Australian researchers are really leading in this domain. It's quite exciting.
It is.
Yeah. And then we go into the environment with one that's really, I don't know, very interesting. It's how an increase in the number of wet days a region experiences may lead to a reduction in economic growth. One would think that rain equates to more agricultural output and maybe better protection for the environment and better higher growth, but seems to be the opposite.
Yeah, it's really interesting. This is a global study, but there is some information specifically for Australia. And the researchers, they used historical data on daily rainfall and economic output across 77 different countries. And they made a model about the impact of rainfall change on economic growth. And they found that an increase in the number of wet days or extreme daily rainfall leads to a reduction in economic growth. And in Australia, the study showed the Northern Territory and also the whole of the East Coast had historically shown the greatest drop in economic growth rates when the number of wet days was higher. Now, rich countries appear more sensitive to daily rainfall, which the researchers say might be because of their smaller dependence on agriculture and greater dependence on services. So that makes a little bit more sense. You know, people are less likely to be out and about and using services available to them if it is a rainy day or there has been extreme rainfall and flooding. They don't want to go out in the rain. So it's, yeah, less to do with agricultural output and more to do with the services that we're using in these economies. So with the, you know, years that we've got ahead of us with La Nina, we might see a bit of a drop in the economy as a result.
Yeah, but rain doesn't melt your body, so people should get out and...
That's it. Wet weather gear is there for a reason. It's been invented for a reason. Use an umbrella. Brave it a little bit. Get out and about.
People stay behind their computers or computer games instead of going out and about and contributing to the economic growth. And this will impact them also with their own, you know, we've all been indoors with the lockdowns and... Yeah, we all got a little bit of a COVID weight.
Yes, absolutely.
And how rain will impact how we move around and contribute to the economy. It's a funny one. Now, scientists have pieced together the complex genetic puzzle of the floral emblem of New South Wales, the iconic Australian waratah, in a world-first research. This is a flower that I like very much, and it's really interesting to find that there's more discovery about its...
Yeah, absolutely. This was a team of researchers that worked on this that were led by the Australian Institute of Botanical Science, and they have assembled the complete genome of the waratah. Now, all living things have a genome. It's the organism's complete set of genetic information, which is made up of DNA. And sequencing a genome is a really vital part of conservation science, and it's happening more frequently for plant and fungi and animal species around the world because it's getting cheaper and technology is advancing. So it's all good news. Now, we haven't sequenced the waratah until now because most plant genome sequencing, in Australia in particular, is all to do with agriculture. It's all to do with crops that we're growing. So we're finally moving on to native plants that we don't grow for these purposes. And sequencing a genome, it's kind of like putting together a puzzle without a picture on the box. So imagine that you're putting together a puzzle that has billions and billions of pieces. With the help of three different sequencing technologies, we've now been able to link all of those pieces that are bits of DNA together and revealing the puzzle. And by mapping those genomes, we get a better understanding of the natural world. We understand the genetic makeup of the waratah, which will give us a better insight into its evolution, how it adapts to the environment, which means that we can better conserve it. And also, you know, it helps us with breeding efforts for the species as well. Now, this reference genome, it's been propagated at the Blue Mountains Botanic Garden in Mount Homer, and it's now going to be a part of the garden's living collection. So you can go visit it, which I plan to do as soon as possible. I'm going to head up there for a hike this weekend and see if I can check it out in person.
Yeah, take some photos and send us some photos.
I will, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Ray Johnston, thank you so much for bringing us more exciting science and technology stories again this week.
No worries. Thanks so much for having me.
1 in 3 of our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander bubs experience ear and hearing troubles that can make it hard for them to listen, learn and talk to others. Hearing Australia's HAPPY program offers free, safe and simple hearing checks for kids under 6 or not yet attending full-time school. Give your kids HAPPY ears today. Call Hearing Australia on 134 432 or visit hearing.com.au today.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from.